We welcome Presiding Justice O'Leary, Vice Chair of the A&E Committee, as well as Mr. Hector Gonzalez, the Executive Officer of the Superior Court of California County of Mono, on the phone, as well as, of course, John Judnick, Senior Manager Finance. Thank you, Justice O'Leary.
Okay. Chief Justice, members of the Judicial Council, I'm here, as the Chief indicated, on behalf of the Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency for the Judicial Branch. We shorten that to the A&E Committee. We have three duties regarding audit reports. The first is to review all audit reports for the Judicial Branch. We recommend to the Council the audits after we've reviewed them. And in making those recommendations to the Council, we make recommendations on individual or systemic issues for the Council's consideration at the time it receives and considers the audit reports. One of the decisions that the committee must make before submitting the audit to the Council for its consideration is whether we will be recommending that it would go on the Council's consent agenda or on the discussion agenda. In making that decision, there are certain general characteristics we review. Those that would favor a consent agenda recommendation include such things as the lack of high-risk nature of issues, whether there are repeat issues, and a number of other criteria. In making a recommendation for whether an item should go on the discussion agenda, some of the general characteristics we would consider would be a report, for example, with an individual issue that we think is particularly significant, or a combination of characteristics or issues that could result in a diminished public confidence in the court's ability to account for or manage public and fiduciary funds. In this particular case, the Mono County audit, there was a unanimous decision that we recommend that this audit be placed on the Council's discussion agenda because of an individual issue. General concerns with respect to the Mono Superior Court audit report included numerous issues identified in the audit that were classified as high-risk areas, 8 repeat issues from the last audit, extended time and efforts of the committee, and I might say also on behalf of staff with committee members, to allow the court to provide its perspective and situation in correcting the identified issues. One of our concerns also was that the court was not taking full advantage of the available automated fiscal and accounting tools to improve controls. Specific concerns included the significant lack of control on procurement, contracting, and expenditure processes, use of court funds for a significant non-allowable expenditure, fund balance accounting practices not adhered to, excess amounts held at county for payroll, in this case it was 7 months, issues relating to controls over identifying, recording, and monitoring trust monies, and there was also a concern that delinquent collections have significantly increased. To address in greater detail, and really the person with the expertise on the audits, is Mr. Judnick, Mr. John Judnick, who's the Senior Manager of the Internal Audit Services, and I'm going to turn it over to him for the details.
Thank you, Justice. Good afternoon, Chief. Good afternoon, Council members. We also have Mr. Gonzalez on the line that will follow my discussion and present the court's perspective concerning the audit, and after his commentary, then we will recommend the acceptance by the Council of the Audit Report. Mount Superior Court, and I think we heard a little this morning about from the Council liaison concerning Mount Superior Court and her visit, is an extra small court. 2 judges, no SJOs, 13 and a half staff members. It has 2 locations, Mammoth Lakes and Bridgeport, where in Bridgeport it holds criminal sessions 2 days a week. I have detail on filings from 09-010, where you can see the bulk of the filings are on the criminal side. Its budget is approximately $2.6 million, with personal services $1.57 million. At the bottom of the slide, I talk about the fund balance as of the most recent date, June 30th, 2011. Its fund balance was $2.1 million, with approximately $1.1 million in assigned category, which means it's court designations. The issues from the audit report that was available for your reading concern 72 reportable issues with 8 repeats, as indicated previously by Justice O'Leary, And those areas are in trust money control, voids, information system controls, the MOUs with the county, procurement and contracting practices, and a number of other areas. The status of the issues at the issuance of the audit report were that 22 were reported as corrected and 50 were incomplete or considered incomplete. One thing I'll state about this is that the court during the last year moved into its new Mammoth Court facility. As part of that movement, it corrected by going into the new facility a number of the issues that affected it in its old facility in terms of cashiering drawers where cashiers were sharing drawers, and a number of other issues. So the timing as such with the audit, we also recognize, and I believe Mr. Gonzalez will talk about the benefit of moving into that new facility in terms of additional and better controls that the court was allowed by that new facility. The management summary of our audit report talks about a number of areas where we felt concern and our repeat issues from the prior area in many of these cases. Some of these are systemic, which will be a slide later on in my presentation. The first area talks about trust monies and the control over trust money in terms of reconciling and knowing what you have in terms of trust monies that are under the fiduciary responsibility of the court. Bank account management practices, where the court was not appropriately segregating the duties of court personnel. Automated fiscal and accounting tools, the usage of Phoenix to assist the court in terms of segregation of duties and better control as opposed to relying on Excel spreadsheets and some of the other tools that the court had. It has Phoenix to provide that opportunity to properly control and the monies and to properly segregate the duties at the court. Court fiscal records incorrectly categorized, that deals with how they accounted for their fund balance monies, how they properly accounted for the monies and which funds they should go to, and the payroll item with the county where the report indicated that the court had $700,000 to cover payroll on deposit with the county. Excessive amount, and the court is correcting that. And then a major area is the procurement, contracting, and expenditure controls where there was general noncompliance in terms of documentation being obtained, approvals over expenditures and invoices not being properly controlled and approved. The one item that is noted in this report is an unallowable expenditure of court funds for a retirement party. That occurred. We reported on it. It's a little over $3,500, and the monies were repaid to the court. Additionally, we had some standard issues in terms of inadequate cash handling practices concerning manual receipts, which is a high issue of exposure on most of our courts, and has resulted in numerous defalcations over the last number of years. Shared cash drawers, which I believe, as I indicated earlier, that the movement into the new court facility has corrected some of those issues. Mail opening oversight, segregation of duties, access controls to DMV, in terms of password controls and the access of individuals. Revenue distribution inaccuracies, which is a systemic issue on the part of our courts. And we are addressing that. At least internal audit services will be assisting the court in the coming months by my visiting them and walking through some of these distribution issues, which over the last, I guess, 10 years or so in our court system have become extremely complicated and difficult for the courts to keep on top of and to avoid penalties. In this particular case, hopefully with some assistance, we will be able to address that and mitigate any penalties that the court may have upon future audits by the state controllers. We had concerns in information system controls in terms of access to the systems. Their prior court exec had unlimited access to assist in correcting the system that he developed for the court. And so he retired and had remote access into that system to help the court correct matters. You can mitigate those controls, and the court has now concurred with that and it is mitigating that control for that access that individual had. And we have other areas, as is typical of most of our audit reports. But that, in summary, is the management summary and the major issues from the audit. As Justice O'Leary indicated earlier, we identify systemic issues that are fairly typical for most of our audit reports and troubling for Internal Audit Services and for the courts. Those areas on this report are their fund accounting in terms of control over trust monies, the standard cash collections area, information systems, the revenue distribution area, contracts that exist with the county or, in this case, are not sufficient nor current, and our biggest concern is in the accounts payable area and the expenditure area for control over invoices and the appropriate approval of expenditures. After Mr. Gonzalez's presentation, we will be recommending that this report be accepted by the council and posted on the website. And I believe Mr. Gonzalez is on the line.
Yes, I am, John. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, I've come from a family of six, so most of them five girls and two boys, so I know how to make myself be projected loudly. So hopefully you'll hear me. I also want to make you be aware that Judge Eller is here present, as well as our fiscal director, George Savage, but I'm going to be obviously making the presentation for the court. And I guess I'd like to start by saying that the first point I think that's important to keep in mind, and John alluded to this, is that this audit covers a period of time where there was great challenge and transition for our court. The period it's covered has only probably about 6 to 8 months under my watch. The majority of this audit period covers my predecessor. And the same is true for our presiding judge. Most of this audit, I think, covers a period before our current presiding judge, Stan Eller, was holding his presiding judgeship. But nevertheless, that does not mean we don't take responsibility. The only thing that is important to note is we bring a new attitude to what we intend to do, which is we do see the value of taking the guidance of the AOC and the recommendations and both mandates and requirements seriously, and will make every effort to comply. And despite these challenges, we do believe that this audit, particularly for me as a new CEO, was a particularly valuable way of getting an accelerated familiarity with the operational aspects of my court that would have been difficult to obtain so quickly any other way. So we actually do see this as a benefit. It's a benefit that hurts, nevertheless. And that actually is necessary, I think, for change to occur. I think there is a requirement here for us to look at longstanding practices and the way we used to do things, felt comfortable with, given the size of our court, which is our challenge. We don't have enough people. We don't have enough resources to do what ideally would be the standard in all circumstances. But that clearly does not relieve us of the responsibility to make the good faith effort and do, in all due diligence, everything we can to comply. And as I think John has alluded, we are attempting to do that, I think, that very faithfully, and have already satisfied nearly one-third of the issues that have been addressed and are continuing to work through them. In fact, I have a big Excel spreadsheet where every single one of them is noted, and I'm checking them off as we proceed and get them implemented. I guess at this point, I would like to address specifically what are probably some of the more substantive issues that were found. And I look at those substantive issues. I have four of them. I didn't want to belabor because of the amount of time, but I'm willing to address any of the others that you may have questions on. But clearly I wanted to talk about the controls over procurement and contracting expenditures. Number two, the issues regarding distribution, fines and fees. Number three, the trust fund monitoring and recording issue. Also our issue having to do with invoicing and approvals. And then finally, address the judge's retirement party expenditure. So let me proceed through those. First, in regards to the procurement contracting and expenditures, this is clearly an area where the size of our court really makes it a challenge for us to be able to do the segregation of duties that clearly is needed. But I give credit to John in that he not only tells you what to do, but he also helps you find a way to do it. And he made us aware of a new program available under Phoenix, which is called the Virtual Buyer Program, which would virtualize some of these duties and make it easier for a court of our size to be able to satisfy the FIN manual as well as use Phoenix effectively. So we're already working towards doing that. And in fact, we're going to be meeting after this presentation among our staff to go through the procurement steps that we're going to take to work through the virtual bio program. Secondly, I'm moving to the next item, which is just distribution of fines and fees, which is not only a systemic problem for many courts, but I think a very particularly serious problem for small courts that have difficulty getting the technical assistance and the sophisticated calculation formulas necessary to keep current with the changes that keep hitting us with calculations and formulas. And I know for our court, this has obviously been a problem that even the state controller has brought to our attention, and to the point where we've had to pay penalties. And any time, particularly in these times, that a court has to pay unnecessarily for something, that is a big red flag. And I know I searched for assistance and resources and found that there weren't really too many people out there that could help us. Our own vendor for our case management system was at a loss to figure out how to improve our distribution formulas and keep them current. In addition, we reached out to other courts who have similar case management systems, because that's the added layer of complication here is the manner of what case management system you use can make your calculation formulas difficult to maintain, change, and update. And trying to find other courts of similar size with similar CMSs who have found a way to cut down their error rate. We've got a little bit of assistance, but it's kind of hard to ask sister courts to give up too much of their time on this, and I'm still hoping that at some point John is going to provide, I think, the biggest point of assistance, the starting point, which is a complete review and audit of our formulas processes when it comes to distribution fines and fees, to give us a starting point of what we are doing wrong so that we can find the assistance. And if need be, I know our court is committed to hiring a consultant if that is the way we need to get assistance. Obviously, if we can avoid the cost, but if the only way we can get that help is to invest to get it, that's clearly well worth it, given the potential risk it provides to our court in penalty assessments and noncompliance. So you can see we take that issue very seriously. The next is the trust fund identification recording and monitoring. This is, again, a consequence of a small court who tries to find efficiencies by combining tasks, duties, and costs. What we've done here is, unlike what would be, and I'm going to probably simplify this or oversimplify, rather than what would be considered the standard approach of having our trust fund accounts separated between an account that holds and then an account we draw checks from, we've combined those accounts into a single account where we receive our criminal traffic trust monies, and then we pay out of that same fund our criminal trust fund monies. And we can reconcile up to a point. The point that we can't reconcile is that we have a indeterminate amount of stale criminal trust fines and fees that have been in that account for many years, well past any current employee's tenure here. And what we needed to do, which is the value of the audit, was to realize that we have to make the effort to go in there, identify those stale trust monies, age them, and then find the case information and get determination made with the assistance of our judges, the county, and the DA's office on how we will resolve the outstanding matter that money was being held for in that trust, which can be now 20, 15, or even 10 years. So that we're already doing. In fact, that's another meeting we're going to have very shortly. We've identified some trust monies. We're already started the process, and we're working them through individually as to determine how we will proceed with them. And then next, I wanted to talk about the issue of the invoice review approvals and such, some of which were, I think, categorized in two manners. there were those that I would call incidences that were occurred, I guess, as a result of some slip or something falling through the cracks. Someone just didn't get the CEO signature for a travel reimbursement. Those I would call just those are inadvertent slip bits. But there were also some systemic problems that were brought out that weren't inadvertent, and those I do appreciate finding out through the audit. And that had to do with our failure to have CEO review and sign off on a number of important services and contracts that we were getting invoices and charged for, primarily interpreters, court reporters, mediators, our child custody avowals. Those were not being systematically reviewed by the CEO and signed off on. And that one was brought to my attention by the audit. We immediately changed. We didn't even wait for any finding. And implemented required CEO sign off on all those invoices, so they no longer just proceed on with the signature of a clerk or the operations manager. Finally, I want to address the judicial retirement party, which I take full responsibility for. It occurred within the first few months of my tenure here. The presiding judge who hired me, Judge Ed Forstenser, was going to retire, which to me was a big shock, given that I just started the job. And I worked, while he was still presiding judge, actually, with a committee of his family members and prominent people in the legal community to plan his retirement party. So the court was sitting at the table with me being the representative. And there was a point where there was a need to make a commitment to hold the setting, the venue for the retirement party, which was a local hotel. No one had the ability to come up with the immediate funds. So I made the individual decision on my own, since I couldn't go to that presiding judge at the time, and I did not advise Judge Eller of this at that time or even later, which I probably should have. I then committed the court to cover the expense necessary to hold the venue. With the expectation, I thought, that others would then come through and provide reimbursement to the court. Now, what occurred, though, is months later, as the event occurred in the bank and things got forgotten, I did not follow through and make sure that commitment to reimburse the court or to pay before the court had incurred the cost had been done. And that was on me. The only thing I can say is, at that point, I started to become totally obsessed with the construction of the new courthouse. Given the size of the court, I was the project manager and on site on the new construction here almost on a daily basis. But I offer that not as an excuse, but just as an explanation of why I literally dropped the ball on that. I did not go back and make that occur in terms of getting that covered by those folks that were at the table as we discussed this event and be planned. So as is indicated, the court has now been completely reimbursed. I personally reimbursed the court myself, feeling that the obligation was on me to make sure this hadn't occurred, and I felt the obligation to make that payment directly. And I think clearly a lesson learned on my part. And I think Judge Eller and I have discussed his retirement. All we're going to do is buy a couple of kegs of beer and go to the park across the street from the courthouse and have the party there. So I think our court has learned our lesson when it comes to retirement parties. And that is the end of my presentation, and I am open to any question.
Kim Turner.
Thank you, Chief. I wanted to start by saying that I was really gratified to hear Mr. Gonzalez say that he believes that audits are valuable and that they're important. I think it's one of the themes that has come up over the years at Council, with respect to how courts can use these as ways to improve business processes, as ways to really walk through the FIN manual periodically. But I also want to stress the fact that the audits themselves are not enough, that John's group goes in and looks at specific things truly on an audit program, It does not look at all the other places where internal controls could be strengthened that don't have a financial or a monetary or some other hook that would bring them back to the financial program. So just as a, you know, as an opportunity, this having an audit as a way to also sort of kickstart a program of looking at all of the business processes, this whole business process reengineering program that we've talked about at Council, this is an opportunity to kind of kick that into gear and look at other things at the court. I also wanted to just say that now, I don't know how many audit reports we have out on the California Courts website. John, is it somewhere around 10, something like that?
Closer to 20.
20 already? Wow, okay. So these are tools for all courts to use. I mean, these audit reports, the findings are, it's not like they're, you know, magic in one court and completely different in another. These are places where courts can go to say, what are the things that they're finding in Mono or in Marin or in Santa Clara or in Sacramento? And we all have similar issues, and these are ways for us to go in and be proactive and get out in front of a cash handling issue or a trust reconciliation issue or whatever it may be, to ensure that we're doing all that we can to be prepared for the next audit that comes through the door. So those are great resources, and they're public resources. They're available to all of us. And John even puts out the 10 heavy hitter issues every year. I don't know what your document is called, but I know at least once a year we get a list of the things that you find most often in every court. So as CEOs and judicial leaders, we need to be heads up about all of that. And finally, in Mono's case in particular, I know that there are trust reconciliation issues and issues with the distributions and so forth, but I also see that Mono does have a healthy fund balance. Was it $2 million or something in reserve? So I think, you know, that this is a place where if you don't have the internal resources to deal with some of these issues, you have a few monetary resources to buy some additional help to go through. I mean, researching old trust funds and researching who gets what and where the money goes, it is time-consuming, and it's probably not part of anybody's day job. But there's an opportunity here to go in and clean that up, because once it's cleaned up, it's easy to keep it cleaned up, but getting it there is really tough. So those are my comments.
Thank you. David?
Thank you, Chief. Hector, this is David Yamasaki. In your presentation, you identified an enormously problematic issue that all courts, be they small or large, in the distribution of fines. It is an extremely complicated process that every court has to go through every year as these things are amended based on changes in legislation and such. And so I'm amongst a group of court execs who are trying to look at solutions to try to simplify that process. And hopefully we can offer some approaches that might be particularly helpful for everybody in trying to simplify this complex exercise that we have to do every year.
Thank you, David. Yes, Justice Miller.
I make a motion to accept the audit.
Oh. Go ahead, Justice Ashton.
Before we do that, I just wanted to say Stan Eller and to Hector, the two of you don't know that I gave a very brief report earlier today about my spur-of-the-moment visit to your new courthouse. I just wanted to thank Judge Eller for the hospitality he showed me. I plan on coming back and spending some time. And I talked about the new courthouse and how outstanding it is, how nice your bailiffs were giving me the grand tour of the place. And, Hector, I'm sorry you got stuck for the bill of Ed's retirement party. I was there. You did a great job, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Justice. I appreciate that.
Judge Rosenberg.
I would second Justice Miller's motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion on whether or not we should, on the audit report, or whether we should accept the report? Hearing no further comment, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. Thank you, John. And thank you, Justice O'Leary. Very helpful audit with a cautionary tale for all of us.
Thank you, Chief.
You're welcome.